Welcome to Episode 8 of Working Title Podcast. I'm Joshua Paul Kane, and I'll be speaking with award-winning author E.M. Kaplan about the essential stuff like food, humor, and Detective Columbo. Oh, and just one more thing. Ways to improve your indie writing success. Enjoy! But first, a word from my sponsor, that is, me. Tired of the same tasteless spam filling your inbox? Try the Scrapple, an alternative to spam. The Scrapple is my monthly newsletter, both lean and flavorful, with writing news and exclusive content. Subscribe today at jpkane.com/newsletter. Thank you. Okay, well, thank you, Emily, for joining me on my podcast. I thought I'd start with a reader question. She kind of asks what I was going to start with, and I don't want to steal her thunder, so I'll just go with her question. This is from handle M. Harris Editor. And her question is, Josie is very motivated by food. How do you rate your love of food and your cooking skills?
Oh, gosh. That is a good question, and I know who that is. That's my editor, Megan.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful person. My dad's family, he was Chinese, and they owned a restaurant in southern Ohio. So food's always been a really big part of my life. He was the main holiday cook at our house, not my mom. She was the nuts and bolts kind of day-to-day cook, but he liked to bring out all the fancy stuff for the holidays. So I've always loved food, and I watched all the cooking shows with him. I grew up with Julia Child, and so I guess that's a big motivator for me. something that everybody loves, you know.
Oh, sure, cooking. Yeah. Do you cook yourself?
I do. I've been a lot more busy, but I love to cook holiday foods, and I'm half Chinese, and the other half of my family is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big, big connection with foods on both sides of the family.
Perfect for Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. So was that your love of food or the family's history a reason why you made Josie a food critic?
Yeah, I think so. I just love describing foods. And in trying to restrict your caloric intake, it's kind of fun just to think about foods and to describe them and kind of go, it's like a little fantasy world, you can eat whatever you want. But then again, I made Josie have a bad stomach.
Right.
So she has a love-hate relationship with food.
Well, talk about how the idea of this series came about, the combining a food critic as a mystery protagonist.
I think the first Josie book started with the idea of the crime first, because I've always loved mysteries. They were the first things that really hooked me when I was a new reader. And so I started with the main crime in my first book, and then I came around to developing the character later, and I didn't want someone who was too far away from me, because I wanted the character to have some legs, some longevity, so I could move with her as she's growing through a potential series, which hopefully she can still keep going. So I had to be comfortable in her shoes, so she's not that far away from me. She's more adventurous and probably more impulsive than I am. So I'm always plotting out her life, whereas she's just, willy-nilly going through it. So food was a natural choice, I think, and a food critic was, words, food. They go together.
Have you ever written an article about food?
I blog about it on my blog a little bit every once in a while, but I haven't done like a cookbook or a food memoir. I love reading them though, like A Movable Feast, an amazing book, and I don't know how to say her name, Ruth oh well. I'm gonna skip over that.
Okay, sure.
But she's like, you know, like some of the main contributors to Epicurious or Gourmet magazine. They've written some memoirs that have been really amazing, and I'm always fascinated by people who are into, as into food as I am, I guess.
Well, it would be a great companion piece to your series, like a Josie cookbook or short stories of food adventures.
Yeah. In fact, I have thought of that. I might do that in the future. There's a few, you know, kind of keystone recipes in each book that she's obsessing about that would probably pull together really well in a book.
And you mentioned that you always had a series in mind for her.
Yeah, maybe that's the, maybe when you're writing mysteries, you're always thinking of the next the next crime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hope that she would go on, and I set her up with three really good friends who are with her in almost every book, in one fashion or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of her and her friends and her life moving forward, and you see a big arc in development with her.
And you also incorporate humor in the book, which is at least for me not typical in a mystery novel. Is that something you also consciously wanted in there from the start, or?
When I was writing the first book, I fluctuated between making it more romantic or making it lighthearted or a little bit grittier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what people call a traditional cozy. Like, a cozy mystery is no graphic violence, no explicit sex,
mm-hmm.
None of the, you know, like the unpleasantness of murder. But Josie kind of walks the line with that. I tend to call her uncozy mystery. They're a little bit grittier.
Well,
so,
certainly, I don't want to give anything away, but there were certainly moments of tension and danger for the character.
Yeah, definitely. I think that you need that. I kind of like that visceral punch of a thriller. But the humor, I don't know what it is about humor. I think it's essential for my life,
mm-hmm.
to relieve stress. And maybe it's part of the Jewish culture, you know, that there's some fantastic Jewish comedians. And I think a lot of that comes from societal or familial pressure, just
mm-hmm.
embedded in your life, and you just have to express it some way.
Is there a humor that is similar to your own, or is hers different, her outlook different than yours?
I think I'm a lot goofier.
Okay.
I'm more, with my kids, I'm more slapstick and horrible puns and dad jokes. And, but she's more sarcastic. I'm kind of a smart aleck, but uh-huh. I'm more of an apologetic smart aleck.
So with her book, how far back does the series go? Like, I mean, when did you first start writing it? How many years ago?
Oh, well, the first book I spent a long time on, mm-hmm. because I tried to get it published traditionally, and I rewrote it so many times that the first draft, for instance, doesn't even have any cell phones in it, no technology, stuff like that. And by the end, you know, those things were so prevalent in our culture that I had to go back and put some in, or explain at least why she's a technophobe and she doesn't have that stuff.
I can sympathize completely with that.
Yes. Yeah, you work on your draft so long,
yeah.
that the world changes around you, and you have to you have to accommodate it. So I started writing it before my son was born, and he, at the time of this interview, is 15.
Oh, wow.
I know. I know. And I tried so many years to get an agent or a publisher that I just kind of I just kind of stopped trying to get it published for a while. And then with self-publishing becoming so easy and more accepted, less of a stigma to it, I decided to give it a shot. And so in 2013, at the end of the year, I published this one through through Kindle, through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become easier to market things as an indie writer, to reach more people, and it's just more accepted, I guess.
I think so. I think each year that goes by, it's more and more accepted. So you didn't start out, it sounds like your journey is much more like mine, where, you know, you had this idea of a traditional route, and now times have changed in the interim, and now it seems that self-publishing is more appealing.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And, I've used so many social media platforms to learn more. I've met several authors who have just been so helpful, and that some of them really successful in marketing their indie books, like just how to, you know, even do a simple thing like run a live Facebook video to talk with your readers. You know, you just learn. I've learned a lot from other writers who've been very generous in teaching me.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's good to have a supportive community.
For sure. I think with indie writers, for the most part, that is, they're not very competitive with each other, because we're not necessarily competing for spots with an agent or with a bigger or smaller publishing house. We're just trying to figure out, you know, what are the best options for advertising, and, you know, what have you been successful with? What have you learned, you know, over the months?
Now you have, sorry.
Didn't oh, go ahead.
Okay, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
Along with the Josie Tucker Mystery series, you haven't, it seems, I haven't read any of them yet. Another series, correct?
Yes, I do. I have a fantasy series. I call it epic fantasy because it's got magic. It's in a different world. It's got monsters and people with abilities beyond human.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've got two books in that series. And actually, the first one is being produced on audiobook and should be for sale any day now, actually. And
that's exciting.
Yeah, audiobooks are the future.
Well, I'm glad you're on the train for that there.
Yeah.
So you're writing these two series in parallel? How does that work? How do you keep on track of you're in one world at one moment and you're in another world another moment? How do you keep your head straight while you're writing both?
That is a good question. Sometimes I think I have more than one brain, and neither of them are at full functioning. the Josie Tucker world is, our contemporary everyday setting, and it's very comfortable to be there and to write in it and be in her shoes walking around in whatever city she happens to be in. And then, but the fantasy world is I had to build it and had to, I use different language. It's a lot more, I'd say, romantic. It's got, a lot of description and more poetic, maybe. And it definitely takes a different mindset. And sometimes I find some music that I like to listen to. And I think for the last one, I got the Game of Thrones soundtrack, which has some beautiful lower strings and orchestral stuff that was really, you know, atmospheric, and it helped a lot.
What's your background as far as fantasy? Are there fantasy novels you enjoyed reading? Is there, you know, as a kid, maybe you grew up in comic books or something? Like, what fuels the imagination for writing the fantasy novels?
Fantasy. I read every single fairy tale you could imagine when I was little. I mean, I went through all of the Andrew Lang edited fairy color books. You know, they had the green fairy book and the orange and the brown and pink. And there must have been thousands of fairy tales in those. And then I went to, I read Tolkien. I read Anne McCaffrey. I read C.S. Lewis. I just, I loved fantasy when I was younger. And for some reason, I just, I think it was school. School tends to push you away from genre fiction and more with into literary fiction. And so you're reading these, you know, Victorian things and whatnot for for classes. And I just didn't read fantasy for a while. And then I had this idea for the first book, which is Unmasked. Mm-hmm. I had all these writing journals from when I was little. And the outline for this story was in one of those, including, like, maps that I had drawn.
Cool.
Yeah, so I was looking at it going, I could really push this in the direction of a more, you know, fleshed out story, with more violent than I thought back then. But I didn't really have, like, axes in mind when I and monsters. When I was little, but yeah, that's where that all came from.
Now, I think I've seen in one of your YouTube videos that you're a pantser, essentially, right? You don't do much plotting. You do, I guess, you just write scenes. Or how's that work for you?
Yeah, it's true. I like to try to keep my writing more spontaneous. And I was actually just looking at the Brandon Sanderson series of lectures where he's taken over a class at BYU University that he took as a student and it really inspired him. And he was the person who took over the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time series when Robert Jordan passed away. And so he was going around the room asking people if they're spontaneous pantsers or if they, you know, like to plot out everything. And there was a mix of people in the room, and he was saying that no matter what you answered, that's pretty much the right answer for you. So I think I'm more of a hybrid kind of writer. I'm definitely like, I like the spontaneity of jumping from one situation to the next and getting your character into tight spots. But I also get stuck occasionally, like probably like everyone. And but when I get stuck is when I start mapping things out more.
Mm-hmm. To get yourself out of the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that would be especially challenging for a series, especially a fantasy series. So you mentioned world building, but how much of it did you nail down before you started writing the first book? Or is it something that, as you're writing, it just unfolds for you, and then it goes onto the page?
With the fantasy one, let me think. I had a lot of the world in mind before. I knew that I wanted to have horses and carriages, and I wanted it not to be too industrialized. And then as the plot grew, though, I realized, well, I need a little bit of science here. I need, you know, the study of trees and why the trees around this particular castle have turned blue with the leaves. So I did incorporate some, like, scientific theories in that book. So I think the book, I mean, the setting and the world grew as I was plotting along, or not plotting along, as the case may be.
Do you have any insight on, now that you're several books into it, that you might have done differently, or do you like the way things are progressing for you? Like, just for readers who might want to write their own fantasies, any tips?
I I think fantasy does require a little bit of plotting, especially if you want to balance the world building with the pacing of the novel. Because world building is typically kind of slow, it's descriptive, mm-hmm. but you want to keep it moving along or else you'll bog people down with your elven language or whatever that you're trying to build. So I think for me, I do love all that stuff. I love the magically being transported to another place. But for me, the characters are king. Mm-hmm. I love setting up a character with so the reader has expectations about that character, and then I like subtly twisting it or changing it so that the character has done something unexpected but still within character.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that's where the humor comes in, too, if a character suddenly says something funny or learns something and changes slightly in their view of the world. I love when that happens in other people's fiction, and I try to do that too.
Are characters your favorite part of the writing process? Or is it more like plotting, or is it revisioning? Or
yeah, it's probably funny coming from a mystery writer, but I love characters the best.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with mysteries, you have a puzzle, and you want your reader to come follow along with the journey and try to, pick up the clues and put them together. But the character is still what drives me and what leads me through a book. Like, I guess that's where old detective stories like Columbo stories or...
I love Columbo.
Yeah, right. It's the character, the goofiness, the where are my keys, padding my trench coat pocket kind of thing.
One more thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I love. And then you take that character, though, and you put him or her in a funny situation, and the reader has expectations as how that person is going to react to, finding a shoe or whatever on the floor, or, mm-hmm. and I like that. It's kind of magical.
And conversely, what is a part of the writing process that has been frustrating for you the most? Or challenging, if you prefer that.
Yeah. It's probably the the chaos of my real life around me. Just trying to find time to think and, put two thoughts together. Because I have two teenagers now, and I have a day job. And I have an evening job, actually. I just started teaching classes at my gym.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It's supposed to balance out the time I sit on my rear end in front of my desk.
I see. Well, there's some character ideas that you'd find at a gym, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Every one of them.
20 squats now, or you're in my book. Is that how you motivate?
Yeah, right.
That's funny.
Yeah, you know, some crazy like Zumba teacher is gonna be killed in a future book or something.
So that's where you definitely need that disclaimer, right? Any resemblances to real people is totally coincidental.
Yes, right.
Well, talk about your routine a little bit, because you, as you say, you've got a lot going on, and how do you find time? How do you make sure that you can focus on the writing? Do you set goals each day? Do you have a special place in the house or outside the house that you go to make it work?
Yeah, my office is in the basement. You probably earlier may have heard some ambient noises with the machinery around me, cycling through or turning on the radiator or whatever. But my work computer is right next to me, and then I have my writing computer on the other side of my desk. And I get up in the morning and I try to get my teenagers out of their beds, which is one of the greatest struggles known to mankind, I think. Those kids do not want to move. So after they go to school, I log into work to my day job, and I work there. And if there's a break in my day where I'm waiting for someone to respond or I'm between projects, I sometimes turn my chair around and write in my book. And my general goal is to try to hit 1,000 words a day.
Okay.
And I sometimes do that, but I have to balance that with getting up, walking around, and learning new dance routines for my gym class, which is crazy.
Oh my goodness!
I know, and but I think I'm probably going to be going down a few hours in my day job, which would be really nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's been a little bit hectic.
Are you able to go through the 1,000 words without editing? Because my problem is I have the editor in my head who's always trying to scratch out the sentence I just wrote. I have a hard time just letting it flow and then coming back to it later.
Yeah, for sure. I think that depends on my mood.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm kind of stuck, I definitely rewrite or I read previous passages to get myself back in the mood. But sometimes I just I know where I'm going and I just go, house on fire, keep going forward. And I just those are the best days, I think.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, when you see the word counter just moving upward, that's always great.
Do you have a little treat for yourself when you've reached a goal?
Nah.
Yeah, okay.
No, I save the fun stuff for when I hit send and send it to my editor or whatever.
Oh, okay. How did you find your editor as an indie, as an indie publisher?
Yeah, I found her through another indie writer who's been really successful. His name is Rick Gualtieri, and he writes this horror comedy series called The Tome of Bill, and it starts with Bill the Vampire.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
It's really funny. It's about this nerdy guy who becomes a vampire. So Megan Harris is his editor, and he was raving about her, and I just sent her some email, and now she's my editor, too, which is
awesome.
Yeah.
And how does that collaboration work out? How do you, what do you give her, and what does she give back to you, and how many revisions, I guess, drafts do you guys go through?
I think it's different for each of her clients, but I send her a draft that's it's probably beyond a first draft. I'm kind of picky when it comes to writing, and I do rewrite some stuff. So the things I send to her, hopefully, are pretty not too far off from the final book.
Mm-hmm.
So I would send her a draft, and she'll send me, a file back with comments, and we'll work back and forth until all the comments are addressed, which isn't so bad.
Okay.
Do
you have a critique group as well, or just the editor?
Just her. I have something like, I'd say about between 25 and 50 beta readers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I have quite a few. So I send them the manuscript, and they read it, and they're not reading for typos. Usually a couple of them are, because that's the way they are. But they're more reading for plot, and they're mystery readers, and they send me comments like, oh, you forgot to address this clue. You dropped this one. So that's really helpful.
How do you assemble this team of 20 to 25 beta readers?
I have an active newsletter
that's
sent out, and I just asked one day, if anyone was interested to drop me a line, and I figured, 10, maybe 12 people would, and the emails just kept coming in.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I just, you know, accept.
And the feedback from them has been valuable?
Oh, yeah, okay. Definitely. That's like, some, you know, some of them are like career mystery readers, practically.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
You know, I'm big fans, you know, possibly people who own cats and may knit. Have several grandchildren.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's kind of brave of you, I guess, to take on just these people whom you've not met before. And to share a not quite ready for prime time manuscript.
For sure. It's kind of the nature of the internet, you know, mm-hmm. where you develop these relationships with people that you've never met face to face. You may chat with them frequently.
Well, can we talk now about your indie pub journey? So you've tried the traditional, it wasn't going anywhere to your liking, and you thought, well, you know, self-publishing is more appealing now. I'll try that. Like, how did you set about doing that? Did you have a list of to-dos, or did you already know what you needed to do, or did you have to do a lot of research beforehand? And
I did not have any idea. My husband is an author as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, and he writes contemporary fantasy, like fantasy in an urban type of setting.
Okay.
And
he'll be my next podcast then.
Yeah, we're both. He's a computer programmer, and I'm a technical writer, so we both have, you know, some knowledge mm-hmm. when it comes to computer stuff and interfaces.
Okay.
So he finished his first book, and he's a risk taker more so than I am, and he decided to just publish using Amazon. So it's like that scene in Indiana Jones and in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they're looking down at the pit with the snakes, and he says asps. Very dangerous. And you go first.
Great line.
Yeah, it was just like that. And so my husband went first, and he didn't die.
Well, that's good.
So I went after that, and he's gotten a lot busier with his day job. So he's working on his third book, but I've kind of pulled ahead of him. Not that we're racing, but. But I've learned more than he has in terms of, you know, where to try to advertise mm-hmm. books and to develop a newsletter readership and stuff like that. So
I've just started my newsletter as well. How's your experience been with the newsletter? How long have you been running it? How often do you put it out? Has it changed over the course of time from what it started, like content-wise?
Yeah, for sure, it has. I started out I try to limit it to 1 to 2 times a month because, you know, nobody likes to get tons of emails from from anybody.
Right.
Yeah, and so I try to announce it only when there are, like, new releases, new books, new audiobooks coming out or mm-hmm. some kind of giveaway or a major, you know, discount that's going on. And lately I've been cross-promoting with a couple of other indie writers, mystery writers, sending out our newsletters, advertising each other's books. And that's been pretty successful, too. Let's see, what else? I've been using a website called, Authors Cross Promoting. It's authorsxp.com. And it's started by another indie writer named Amy Van Sant.
Okay.
And she is providing a lot of, they're paid for services, but they're pretty reasonable. And she does things like ebook giveaways where all these authors get together mm-hmm. and offer an ebook and people sign up and give their email addresses. Excuse me. And she's starting to list sale books a lot, like there's a major book sale news, what am I trying to say, email subscriber site called BookPub.
Okay.
If if you've heard of that one. And that's probably the pinnacle site, you know, the very best site in terms of promoting a book. So a lot of other sites have been starting up these services where they list, you know, sale books and get email subscribers. So it's a crazy market, and she's getting into that, and she's been very helpful for me in doing the newsletters.
What software or website do you use for your newsletters? Is that like MailChimp or?
Yeah, I've been using MailChimp. I know there are some other ones out there, but I just haven't devoted the time to researching them. I know there's like Mad Mimi and Constant Contact, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But gosh, there's kind of a limit sometimes to how much time I want to spend doing this stuff. I'd rather be writing or, I don't know, taking a walk.
But you found the newsletter, that service, MailChimp, to be good for what you need to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have a pretty friendly, you know, interface if you're not that savvy. It helps you set it up and make it a little bit pretty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen one of them already, and, yeah, it looked very well put together.
One of mine?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Excellent. Thanks.
You're welcome. Endorsement from Josh. What more do you need? So. And on Twitter, you're on Twitter. That's how I met you. You've got just a few more people than me, 64,000. I've got just over 2,000.
I don't really know how that happened.
How did you get so many? How was it all organic, just like one-on-one, or did you use the service, or how
it's
do you?
It's all organic.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, one by one. And
good for you.
Yeah, I used to devote a lot of time to tweeting, and my family made fun of me endlessly. But I would try to devote, you know, a little block of time to it each night. And some of those people who follow me are actually speak English. I don't know who everyone is. It's nutty. And sometimes I get like a famous person or a restaurant, like Applebee's follows me, and I don't know why. I don't understand
it. That happens to me. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't want to drop names, but yeah, like, out of the blue, people who I would never guess in a million years would ever want to follow me, and then they're following me, and I'm thinking, okay, well, tomorrow they'll realize their mistake, and they'll stop following me, but they're still around, so I don't know what they're thinking.
But Twitter is a game that I haven't really figured out the rules yet.
Yeah. Strange sometimes.
But it has been wonderful for meeting people like you and like other people who have, you know, like writing interests. That's been amazing.
And you're on each day at like a certain time? You're just, or is it throughout the day? Because I'm here and there just a little bit at a time. I'm not there constantly. So.
Yeah, it used to be per day, each day in the evening, but now lately I've dropped off and I just, I don't know, kind of like throw my hands in the air. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, the Twitter, your Twitter page looks nice. You got the, your Josie Tucker, like cover, I guess, up on the, as the header. And
yeah, I've got my new orange and yellow flaming something or others. That's an ad for my upcoming book, which is going to feature some barbecue recipes. Barbecue
is
set in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the theme there. It's got my picture has a spatula and a big butcher knife and a heart.
Oh, man.
It's a flame.
Well, I'm sure it'll be good. I wish it success.
Thank you.
And you also have in your Twitter description that you're award-winning. How did that come about? What awards did you win? And was that something you submitted yourself or someone on your behalf submitted? Or?
The one of them is an Indie Brag Award or a medallion. And I did not submit to that, and I was invited to submit. Actually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a group of former publishers and other like other award-winning writers who kind of vet indie books and recommend them, and award the ones they like the best with his medallions. So I felt pretty good about that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but recently I won an award from it's the Library Journal, and they're one of the foremost publications for librarians across the U.S. And they have a division called bibliophile, and their self e division is specifically for indie published books, and they awarded me for The Bride Wore Dead, which was really exciting, and I got to go down to the ALA American Library Association conference in Atlanta a couple months ago, and to their award ceremony. That was really cool.
Awesome. Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, I saw you on YouTube. How did that come about? Because I guess you take, at least some of it was where you're filming yourself, I guess, with your smartphone.
Yeah.
You're kind of almost like a confessional. Like you're talking about how your family's right over there off camera.
That's exactly what it was. It's for a series. It was for a series called Indie Writer Confessions. That's like exactly what it was.
Okay.
And that person found me through I believe through Twitter as well.
Oh, cool. All right.
I'm not even sure how some of this comes about. It just happens.
Just happens.
Yeah. I must be a big goofball that people like to talk to.
Well, it's not something I would like to do because I'm not a video photography kind of person. I like to write, and I'm not like, I'm pretty introverted, so.
Yeah, well, this is pretty extroverted for me at this moment.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
Thanks. And you know what? And teaching dance classes at the gym, too, that is insane for an introvert.
That's true.
I don't know how that happened. Well, I do. We had a teacher who couldn't come to our town anymore. She lived far away, and the people in the class loved the class. We loved the format, and they all looked at me and they said, "You go get certified to teach this class." And I did. And I always think I can do anything for an hour. I'm not talking about the physical, stress of it. I'm talking about the emotional stress of an introvert standing in front of a classroom and teaching dance fitness.
And what style of music do you use for dance fitness, or do you go all over the place? Is it like salsa one moment and then like?
This one is hip hop. It's urban.
Hip-hop. Okay.
It's some pop. It's kind of it's crazy.
That is.
How did this happen?
Oh my goodness! And then you're also on Facebook, though I'm not really.
Yeah, I am.
And how often do you keep up there? And what do you post on there? How do you utilize Facebook for your book sales and all that?
Yeah, I use Facebook a lot because I'm on there for my day job. I mean, it's just up in the background, so it's easy to respond to people when they're talking about my books, or I'm just there.
Oh, okay.
Like a constant presence. But you there are Facebook ads you can purchase for promoting your posts. I think I post something maybe, I don't know, a couple times a week. I hope it's not more than that because it could be obnoxious. But my personal Facebook page is more about my kids and how we're all crazy.
Right. Sure. So you have two pages, and you have one for your book and one for your personal life, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know what? I find that a lot of writers have friended me or followed my personal page too, so now I, it's a big mix.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now, with your audience, you have your newsletter, you have Twitter, you have YouTube, and you've got Facebook, and your website also.
Mm-hmm. So,
what do you find most interactive with your readers? What attracts most readers, or has the most book conversion, I guess, is the term for...
Yeah, for sales?
Yeah, for sales. What has worked the best for you, or has it been even? Or
I think hands down, it's been my newsletter.
Okay.
When I send out a newsletter, I currently have maybe 7,000 subscribers to my newsletter.
Wonderful, great.
Yeah, and I, you know, when I send a message to them, I know that many of them are clicking because they're interested in what I have to say. It's versus Twitter, where I don't think Applebee's really cares about my books as much as, you know, there might be a lovely people in a wonderful family restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not paying me to endorse them at this moment.
Right.
But they could if they want.
That is official, Applebee's, if you're listening. Contact Emily endorsement deals. So.
Right. Okay. but yeah, the newsletter, if I send out a message with a sale, I definitely notice an uptick in book sales within like an hour or two. So it's pretty amazing.
That's great.
Yes.
Now, how do you structure your newsletter? Is it very brief? Is it just one thing? Is it several things each time? Is it, you know, how do you?
Yeah, I try to make it as brief as possible because I know that if people are going to grace me with the honor of clicking on my newsletter, that I don't want to bother them too much.
Right.
So, you know, I just have like one feature at the top if it's a sale or important message. And then at the bottom I might have, if I owe other writers favors, I might mention that some of their sales or something like that, or promote a blog post that I just did that's, if it's relevant to anything in the world.
Getting back to your experience with the indie publishing, so you and your husband decided to, you know, self-published with CreateSpeed, correct? That's the Amazon service, the print-on-demand.
Right.
So what did you do leading up to, you know, to the publication of that first book? Like, did you have your newsletter already out? Did you have Twitter up? Like, how did you get the word out that this book is coming out?
Oh, man. Yeah, the first book went out, and it was pretty much... I didn't have a newsletter. I did have a Twitter account because I've had one since maybe 2007 or 2009, just because I've been in the technology sector. So I was playing around with Twitter for a while,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't really use it for anything. So the first book went out, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know if anyone would see it or if Amazon would bury it. You know, I didn't know how things were set up. So it was mostly a friend and family kind of push.
Okay.
In the beginning. And then as I went on Twitter and I started to meet other writers and see what they were doing, I learned that there were, you know, ad services that you could promote with, websites, promoting through Facebook ads, stuff like that. So it's all been very... a very slow but steep learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I feel like I learned something new almost every week, probably. Like, oh, so-and-so has a budget of something for ads per month, and I'm like, whoa.
How many digits was that?
I know, exactly. I'll be lucky to meet that in a... Well, never mind.
I hope there's a decimal point in there.
Oh, right.
And how about the cover? How about actually putting the ebook together? Was that all you, or did you hire a service for that?
I was lucky. I've been a technical writer, so I can handle files and formats and page layouts really well. I started as a technical writer in 1997.
Okay.
So I've been handling documents for a while. So I was able to do all that myself. And in terms of covers, I didn't know what I was doing in terms of graphic design. But my sister is a graphic designer.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah. So she helped me with the fantasy ones. And with the mystery ones, I've learned over time to do them myself. And I do those myself.
And so when the day came that it comes out, what were your expectations? Were you nervous? How'd that come about?
Oh yeah, oh, the first one.
Yeah, your very first.
First one.
Yeah, your very first.
Book. Yeah, I was nervous, super nervous. I mean, you click publish and you kind of sit there and you're like, oh man, people are gonna read that. My mom's gonna read that. What did I say? Oh, what was I saying on page 54? Oh dang. And yeah, I think over time, I think everybody's nervous like that, and over time. You either stick with it and you develop some thicker skin, mm-hmm. hopefully, or else you unpublish and you go hide.
That was the desperate act if it came to it. So.
Yeah, right.
It never happened. Never happened. I was never published.
Right. But, you know, actually, I was in graduate school for creative writing.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, it was a really nice time. I mean, I didn't expect anything to come of it. I didn't expect to write, like, get a publishing deal or anything like that. I just wanted the time mm-hmm. set aside so I could write. But I'm mentioning this because not because I think people need to go to school to be writers, but because I was in some workshops, many workshops, where people read my stuff out loud or they read it scornfully or... You know, or oh my God, this is, you know, what were you thinking? Or I have no idea what you meant by this. So I think I was lucky to develop a thicker skin, in school, thanks to that. And not every indie writer has been able to, you know, develop that callus you sometimes need.
Have you ever had a reader give, let's say, constructive criticism? Not just it sucked, but I mean something that you that was negative, but that you learned from.
Oh yeah, for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah. I was gonna say most critical reviews have a grain. No, that's not true. Some are just crazy.
Yes. Well, yeah. Some clearly haven't even read it.
Yeah, you know, I know. I don't understand why that happens. But yeah, maybe it's just terrible. Don't understand the nature of what you're reviewing. But yeah, many of them have, and I'm the type of person who tries to not take anything personally, but mm-hmm. maybe absorb a little of what the person is trying to tell me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd probably look at the letter with like through my fingers over my eyes, I think.
Yeah, you do need that a lot. But you know, I read a bad review or something like that, and I try to tell myself that the review is not for the writer. Mm-hmm. The review is for other readers.
Right.
So it's not personal. It's just the person's reaction.
Sure.
You know, anybody's reaction could be valid in some way.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is good. I mean, in all seriousness, it is good. I, at least for me, I enjoy getting constructive criticism more than, you know, just empty praise. Like, you know, oh, it's great. Well, that's not as helpful as, you know, your pacing was off here or your dialogue needs to be sharper or something like that. Because then you can improve that. You know, you can't do anything with it's great, you know, because you want your work to be as best as you can make it.
Right, right. But you do have to consider where the criticism comes from sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you shouldn't listen to whatever. Every person tells you, but
yeah,
it's got to ring true.
Yeah, definitely.
And you mentioned earlier, sorry to ping around here, but the ads. What kind of ads have you found that are effective for you?
Well, there are many services out there, like BookBub, eReader News Today. Let's see here, Bargain Booksy. Just the, you know, some of them are popping up overnight, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it helps to make friends with other writers who are more experienced than I am.
Sure.
Some of them even have, like, these intense spreadsheets that they've shared with me where, you know, over time they'll say, oh, this service only did a ROI of this percentage. And I'm like, oh, man, you are way into this.
Wow.
I get a little hypertensive when math is too involved.
That's right.
So, but yeah, but this, the experience of others has been so useful. so helpful in learning which sites to advertise with. And you know, I've never tried, for example, a Twitter ad. That just hasn't sunk into my brain as being something that I wanted to try. But I have tried Amazon ads, Facebook ads, stuff like that. There's quite a few services out there.
And does that include using BookBub, or were you just mentioning BookBub?
I was just mentioning it, but okay. I haven't got a feature mm-hmm. with them because it's so intensely competitive to get in with them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but I have done an advertisement with them several times. One of them was really, really did well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
So BookBub, Amazon, and Facebook ads you've done, and overall they've been good for you.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, you can't set them and go away. You kind of have to treat them like a little a little seedling that you're watching.
Oh, okay.
You have to cultivate it. You have to maintain it and check up on it. It's kind of an occupation.
Have you, you've collaborated with other authors, you say. Have you done guest post on their sites or vice versa? How else have you collaborated with them to help mutually benefit one another?
Let's see. Well, actually, next week I'm going to be part of a podcast with a bunch of other fantasy writers.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah.
What's that one called, so people can look
they,
into
they
it?
Play, they play a game that's similar to Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to be a guest on their podcast in their game.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. I don't know if you were ever a gamer like that, but...
Oh, yeah. In high school, college.
Yeah. Right. And their podcast is called Authors and Dragons. And, Yeah. It's a really funny. I've been listening to it for a while, and they crack me up. So...
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. That's one way.
I sell my books.
Yeah.
First editions and things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good luck on that. That sounds like a really exciting time.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully, well, even if I mess up or whatever, it'll still be funny.
Okay. Well, let's not hope that it's messed up, but hopefully it'll be funny. How long does those podcasts, have you listened to them before? Are they like an hour long or...
Yeah, they come out to about an hour, and sometimes they do a Q&A session at the end. And yeah, I think they've been running for a couple of years now. Kind of funny.
Well, I'll definitely have to check them out. And how do people check you out? Let's wrap up with how people get in touch with you.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm on Facebook. I write under the name E.M. Kaplan. Those are my initials. And my website is www.justthemwords.com. And that's probably the easiest way to find me because all my contact information is on my website.
Oh, that's smart. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Well, likewise. I hope we do it again, and I'll definitely look out for your podcast over at Authors and Dragons.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining me. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.